All right, we get it, Oliver Howard. We get it.
Oh, God, Oliver. He was in my dreams, I think. I think he found a way.
Pounding you.
Get into my head.
Anthony, where's the new episode?
Yeah.
No, we hear you. We hear you. Hey. We hear your qualms. Here we are. Here we are, Oliver. And everybody else. Hi, everybody. Everybody else.
Hello.
Oliver and all of you else. All of you else? I don't know.
All of
welcome in. Hey, it's episode number 66 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm Tyler Vaughn.
I'm Anthony Masterson.
And, yeah, baseball.
Baseball's back, guys.
From what I've heard.
Baseball's officially here. And they're actually playing games and stuff. And it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been kind of fun to watch so far. I don't know what that's all about.
Yeah, I mean, the Rockies have won a lot of innings in the first week of camp.
It's never on TV. Yeah, no, a lot of innings wins. A lot of winnings.
Winnings. There you go.
Rockies are 4-2.
Yeah.
They are a game back of the first place Washington Nationals in the National League side of standings.
We're already scoreboard watching.
Yeah. As far as the Cactus League goes, at 4-2, they are a half game back of the first place Milwaukee Brewers and Texas Rangers. So get pumped. Woo!
I'm pretty pumped.
Spring training titles. Yeah. Gia.
Gia. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's baseball. It's you were down there last week. I'm going down there actually today. We're recording this on Tuesday, March 8th. I'm going down tonight. How was it? How was it down there? You were down for the first
Well, of course it was awesome, as always. Salt River Fields is second to none. I got to go see actually a couple of ballparks I'd never seen before as well. Camelback Ranch in Glendale, the split
That's
Dodgers White Sox facility.
That is my second favorite behind Salt River.
Okay, I have a question. Do you know if did they move in like old seats from Dodger Stadium to
I
that
don't
place?
Know, because that's what it looks
because
like.
Because they're they looks like that and they're really uncomfortable. The actual ballpark itself was very nice. And there was free parking. That was great.
Let's see.
Yeah. The other one I went to was in Surprise or in Peoria, where it was the split Mariners Padres facility. And it's Royals Padres.
A lot of work on.
Yes, and it was one of the cheapest ones you're going to find out there, too. It was very, very nice.
Yeah, yeah, I like that one. It's one of the – I don't want to say older because it's certainly not old, but it is sort of one of the last generation of spring training ballparks. I think that was built kind of early 90s-ish.
It's definitely gotten some work done.
Yeah, yeah, and they were doing a lot of work. When I was down there for the Arizona Fall League, they were working on renovations there. They were working on a lot of renovations in Surprise also, the Rangers and Royals facility. So there is you can't go wrong anywhere in the Cactus League.
You really
Grapefruit
can't.
League, it seems like it's kind of a crapshoot. I know JetBlue Park, the home of the Red Sox, is supposed to be great. I've heard that Dunedin,
the Blue Jays facility is great.
I've heard Dunedin is just phenomenal. You know why? Because work gets done there.
Yeah, it really makes
you
work.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. You really just – you get there and all you want to do is work. Instantly.
Yeah.
Just instantly makes you work.
You go – you apply your trade in the fields.
That's what they tell me.
Yeah, you'll work for pennies a day.
you're like migrant labor in Dunedin, Florida.
Yeah.
It's not a it's not a real plush environment like those losers have in Scottsdale. But if you are, or Jerry Schemmel say this the other day, if you're on the fence about going down to spring training, go down to spring training because it's amazing at Salt River Fields, a talking stick. The only place that I have not gotten to down there yet where I'm going to hit on Thursday morning is Maryvale, which is the
Brewers, right?
Yeah, the Brewers complex, which from every account that I've heard from everyone is like, don't go to Maryvale.
Yes.
I guess it's not in the best neighborhood. And I'm going to go there. I'm going to try to talk to a couple of prospects there for some stories, and we'll see how it goes. If I get killed, we know why.
Yeah, I know the new Brewers ownership is trying to get a new facility put up for the Brewers down there, so I think that's the next step for them in their rebuilding process. But
what would be great is if everybody shared. Honestly, I mean, I think we're kind of in a situation where the shared ballparks are by far the best, and why overbuild for spring training parks? You use them for a month.
Yeah.
You know, there's 15 teams there, so obviously somebody's going to be left out. Is that right? They're 15? There's 15 in each.
Yeah, it's 15-15. With the exception of the Cubs, they're not going to sell out every game.
Right.
So
right.
It's best. They can have their own, but it's best for pretty much everybody else to share.
Just share.
If there were seven other stadiums besides the Cubs, I think that'd be fine in Arizona.
I'm also excited to see the Cubs' former home, Hohokam Park, which is now the A's. I went to their minor league side last year and watched a couple of backfield games, but I haven't been to the major league stadium there, which I've heard they did phenomenal work, kind of rejuvenating. They did some renovations there and all that. But, yeah, I love Glendale. Glendale I really like. I really, really like Goodyear, too.
Oh, yeah. The Indians and Reds facility.
It's way the hell out there.
Way the hell out there. But it's great because if I'm driving out from L.A., I can get there.
Oh, that's on the way.
I can get there in 5 hours. It's the westernmost suburb of Phoenix, basically. Oh, if I'm going to like Mesa or Scottsdale, it's an extra hour drive, but I'm still in Phoenix the entire time.
Yeah, Phoenix is like, it is certainly not the easiest place to get around.
Phoenix is massive. Yeah.
I'm staying like right in the middle of Phoenix in an Airbnb, like right in the center of Phoenix. So I'm kind of, at least I have good distance to everywhere. But if I have one of those days where I have to go from Peoria Surprise or Glendale all the way over to, or Goodyear all the way over to Scottsdale for one of those, it's going to be that'll be a haul. But
if you're staying near downtown, check out Matt's Big Breakfast. They have a very
Matt's
good salami scramble.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. That sounds good. Last year, Danielle Jeffries and I tried to go to a place in Scottsdale that had a 3-hour wait for breakfast.
Hard pass.
So I went to another place that was amazing. And I thought to myself, if this place is this good and the other place had a 3-hour wait, I have to find out how good that place is. So I think this year that's going to be one of the plans.
What's it called? Because Nicole is from Scottsdale. So
you'll get you can get the recommendation.
She can check it out for you. Okay. Or she'll know at least.
I'm going to look it up on Yelp right now because it was supposed to be amazing.
This is great podcasting, by the way.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. I'm going to type in I used to work with a radio show.
We're just doing errands right now.
I used to work with a radio show host in this town who I won't name, but his name rhymes with Will Geitley. And he would look stuff up online during the show. But you could like hear him typing into his computer the whole time too. Oh, let me look this up really quick, and then he would type into his computer. And yeah, that was some real good radio there. I already can't find what the name of this place is.
No, we'll leave it at this. If you've never been down to spring training, there's no reason why you shouldn't go. Arizona is the best in March.
Yes.
So I can't wait to go in another couple of weeks for a bachelor party. It is going to be phenomenal. We're going to go to three different facilities, Cubs, Rockies, of course, and then Hohokam. So
nice.
First time ever going there as well. So awesome. Very, very excited about that. Let's talk about your Colorado Rockies.
A hot 4-1 start to the 2016 spring training slate. Two things. One, thanks to Thomas Hardick for the hashtag #ProspectPalooza, which I really like.
I actually met Thomas when I was in.
He's awesome.
Yeah,
Thomas
I met him for the first time on Thursday. I said, "Oh, I'm part of the PDP," and he said, "Oh, I know Tyler," and then he walked away, shaking his head.
I bet that's not true. he doesn't pay attention to us. We suck. And you can accidentally retweet profanity. We have big competition, by the way. Now there's another podcast in the old podcasting scene. I don't know if you've heard, but we got big competition. But yeah, the Prospect Palooza, thanks to Thomas Harding that has started spring training, has been a ton of fun. And secondly, I went into a Lids yesterday, saw the Rocky spring training hat, and that thing sucks.
Yeah, up close, it wasn't as nice.
That's what I thought. I thought it was going to be like, maybe I'll show up and that purple will really pop. It'll look like a neon sign or something cool. That hat sucks.
Yeah, it wasn't worth it. And if you're going to get something that's going to be dated like that with the AZ logo flushed on the side,
it's got to be really cool
besides that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is not. If I, of all people, am turning down the opportunity to buy a hat, that is a terrible hat. Because you don't need to do much to convince me to buy a hat. But that hat I will not purchase. So anyway, now that we got that out of the way, who's impressed you most so far? We've seen a ton of guys already get looks. Trevor Story has looked fantastic. Raimel Tapia is still batting .500, which I think we all need to agree on a pronunciation for his name.
Is it not Raimel?
So the radio guys have been saying Raimel Tapia. And to me, like, it's a Hispanic last name, so Tapia just sounds like the most anglicized way you could say it. But maybe that's how he says it. I don't know. So maybe
we should get Keaton Gologly back on the show and ask him.
Yeah, we should ask Keaton how he actually says it. Okay, so we'll go with ours for now. But who's jumped out at you so far? Because there's been a lot of really good showing so far.
I mean, I feel like we can't really start talking about what's happened so far in Scottsdale without mentioning the biggest position battle going on right now, and that's with the shortstop position. Obviously, Jose Reyes and his whatever is going to be a deal once the legal process is done. Aroldis Chapman getting 30 games for without charges being filed. Got to mention, Jose Reyes is going to get at least twice that.
Yeah.
So thankfully, the Rockies can go into camp this year and not have to worry about anything with that hanging over their heads. But the guy who's impressed me the most so far that I saw, because I was at the game on Thursday when he hit that 440-foot home run to dead center field with an exit velocity of 108 miles an hour, is Trevor Story. Trevor Story so far has played in four games. He has a couple of home runs. He has five driven in. He's walked three times, only struck out twice in six official at-bats. So that's been a very, very good sign so far for the Rockies, because Story right now, he is on the cusp of the big leagues. And Bobby DeMuro, our good buddy, who I actually met for the first time on Thursday at Purple Row, had a great article this morning on Purple Row about Trevor Story. And it's funny because the team would probably want to see him start the year in AAA, just if nothing else, to delay his service clock. He's only 23 years old right now. Last year, he got 61 games at AAA Albuquerque. Overall last year, hit .279, an .863 OPS, 20 homers, 40 doubles. Strikes out a lot, but he always has throughout his entire minor league career. So that's nothing new. But the fact that he's putting up more consistent numbers at higher levels in the minor league system, still only 23 years old, the Rockies may want to keep him down low for a little while. Who knows? But right now, basically, in the first week of camp, Trevor Story has been forcing the Rockies to take notice. And Christian Adames, he's been playing. He's the guy that is facing Trevor Story in that battle as well. So far, he has not been a slouch either. He has been five games, 10 at-bats. He's hitting .300 with a run driven in, three hits, a couple of doubles. So Adames is doing well as well. But the guy who's impressed so far, Trevor Story, it's not close. Trevor Story, when he hit that ball on Thursday that I was in attendance for, it sounded like a firecracker coming off his bat. It was one of those perfect swings that you get sometimes, whether you're in the cage or you're in a game or it's Carlos Gonzalez hitting the ball, where it just sounds like nothing. It's almost like silence when he hits it. You're just like, oh.
You can't feel it. You can't feel it coming right off the bat when you're swinging. Yeah.
Like time stops and it's like Inception and like there's a dreidel spinning somewhere and you don't know if like this is actually real life. When Story hit that ball, it was like, all right. So
for
Story,
I
think
now.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, I never thought I could feel. I didn't know I could get goosebumps there. Story has been the story so far. It's a love story. It's going to be fun this year to make a lot of puns on his name.
You had a second there where you could have gone to a Taylor Swift pun, and I'm really happy that you didn't. So thank you for that.
That's not my game.
Yeah. No, he definitely has been the most impressive, and I certainly agree that it would seem like the Rockies believe they have somebody to delay service clock start time with. I think if they were not concerned about that, they would have brought him up at the end of last season. So that leads me to think a little bit differently about this going into opening day.
And we'll discuss this later too. Our what we think opening nine will be on April 4th. So we'll talk about that later. But yes, go on.
If Christian Adames acquits himself to be a very above serviceable prospect at shortstop, I think that he gets the job out of spring training. Daniel Descalso, I think, gives you the depth. Maybe Descalso is your guy on opening day, but Adames gets most of the innings. I'm not really sure. But I think right now, because he already has some major league time, because he's not older, actually. Christian Adames and Trevor Story 24. Are right around the same age. But if he's 24 and Trevor's 23, but I think they're only a couple of months apart. If you see this spring start continue for Christian Adames, I think he's the guy that this team turns to get the season started. Now, if he comes up to the big league level, struggles to hit whatever, if you can get Trevor Story up by the end of April or the early part of May, if he really starts on a surge with Albuquerque, then I think you set yourself up pretty well, especially because of the fact that you're probably not going to have your quote-unquote starting shortstop until the middle of the season. And to be honest, I don't know how much we're really going to see of Jose Reyes going forward.
Hopefully nothing.
Because, if Trevor Story comes up and is hitting .280 and OPSing .850, you're not going to sit him down. $7.50.
There's just no need to play Jose Reyes anymore. A player in stark decline who's got domestic violence issues. Why would you need to get that guy staying on your team? You don't got to get him at bats.
Right.
You know?
Stark decline, legal issues. He's dumped all over your franchise already. I mean, he's getting paid whatever.
$22 million or some absurd number.
Now, he won't be over the suspension. He's getting paid during spring training. We had some people ask us questions about this. He's getting paid during this sort of leave that he's on for spring training. He will not get paid during the suspension.
Right.
So the Rockies will – that all of that money will be deferred. So I guess I shouldn't say deferred because he's not going to get it later either. He loses out on that money. So that's something just to clear up. But I don't know how much we're ever going to see of Jose Reyes again. And really, to be honest, one of the things I regret most saying on this show ever was when the Rockies acquired Jose Reyes, and this was a thought I had at the time, but I actually said, you kind of forget what a fun player he can be to watch. And man,
he was at one point, sure.
Yeah,
I mean,
not anymore. Not anymore. Now you just sort of rage when you see him. I think right now, Adames is my pick to get the job starting this season. But long term, Trevor Story is really showing that he's the guy the Rockies thought they had. That's what it feels like, which is really exciting.
Adames does have major league experience each of the last two seasons, 26 games in 2015 at .245 for the Rockies last September. It's 7 games in 2014. Last year in AAA, Albuquerque, 116 games, 11 home runs. He hit .311. He OPS'd 800. Doesn't strike out much, doesn't walk much, but he has a major league skill set in a lot of ways. He can get on base. He can steal a few bases here and there. He can play some pretty solid defense. So
he's a fun player.
Christian Adames is a very good player.
Yeah.
There wouldn't be much of a drop off if the Rockies wanted to go that way on opening day rather than make Trevor Story's service clock begin. Now, because Adames has one more year in his life, he has one more year or basically 30 more games or so of MLB service time. His clock has already started. So it's a little bit different. If they want to see what Christian Adames has, because he's still a pretty solid prospect in the minor league, still very young for the Rockies, there's no problem with doing that. But I think that if you want to see a guy who's opened eyes already in camp, it's Trevor Story, and it's not close.
The thing I like about Adames is even though he doesn't have that high of an offensive ceiling, he's gotten better as he started to grow a little bit older. 2014, he won the Dominican Winter League batting title. He batted .353. Last year, career highs with that slash line, .311, .362, .438, and 11 home runs. He's not going to be Troy Tulowitzki offensively. He's not going to be Trevor Story offensively. But he seems to have moved himself from – he's kind of gone on a minor league version of a DJ LeMahieu path where it's somewhat of an offensive – I don't want to say liability, but kind of a slouch spot in the lineup to where he can beat you. So I like that about Christian Adames. So I think, you know, if I'm Walt Weiss, if I'm Jeff Breidich, and I'm looking at the best option to get the season started – if Adames continues to play well in spring training, I think he's the guy that you look at right out of the gate. I mean, you know, like we said, he's a fun player. I like Adames a lot.
So. And I mentioned, you know, in his first, 10 at bats, he has 3 hits. He's got an RBI, got a couple of doubles. It's not like he's Daniel Descalzo. I mean, he really is. He's got some potential to him, and he's got a pretty maybe measured ceiling, but his floor is hardly as low as people think it is.
Definitely.
So.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. By the way, we didn't even name this episode.
Oh, good God.
Episode
number 66.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are creeping closer to the Cameron Goldner edition of the Purple Dinosaur podcast. 66, the only 66 in Rockies history. You saw him last year. John Axford. We're a stretch of 4 consecutive podcasts with 2015 Rockies relievers.
Yeah. That shows you a lot.
Yeah,
so, a lot about that team from last year.
Yeah, John Axford last season started out poorly, then got really, really good. Should have traded him. Then it all went downhill for John Axford. But last year with the Rockies, 60 appearances. He had 25 saves, 55 and 2/3 innings. Struck out 62, which is very good. ERA of 4.20, which is nice. WHIP of 1.6. Gave up a lot of hits per 9 innings, walked a lot of guys per 9 innings, 10 strikeouts, 5 walks per 9 innings. So, yeah. But
that was a weird stretch.
It was a weird thing. And Axe had a very, very weird year last year, too. Obviously, in spring training, he had the rattlesnake biting his young son who was going through hospitals, in and out of the hospital all year, basically, last year. He had to stay in Phoenix for a while to make sure everybody was okay. And I think he's all right now. But, man, I can't even imagine having to go and play at professional athletics at all with something like that hanging over your head as your family with your, what, 2-year-old son or something like that?
Yeah.
Who got bit by a rattlesnake. Too. It was just absolutely an awful story. But kudos to John for persevering. It didn't work out with the Rockies, but he parlayed into a 2-year, $10 million contract with the A's this offseason. So good for him.
And a pretty good Oscar ballot again.
Pretty good. 17-24 wasn't like 2 years ago when he went a perfect 18 of 18.
Table,
but,
yeah.
Still
pretty impressive. So yeah, welcome to the John Axford edition of the show. Welcome in 20 minutes into the show. the thing that I have liked most this spring is what we've seen so far from pitching prospects.
Let's talk about pitching for a second because it's been fun so far.
Yeah, it's a 5.09 staff ERA, which for the Rockies is basically the equivalent of like a
best in franchise history. Yeah.
John Gray yesterday struggled a little bit, but the story that Thomas Harding has up on Rockies.com right now kind of points to why. We talked about this last fall. He told me one day toward the end of the season he was working on adding a curveball, was really excited about it. Now he's getting a chance to work on that in games. When you work on it in spring training, you sort of know that you're going to get beat up from time to time. And that's what happened to John Gray yesterday. Yeah. He gave up a couple of home runs. Those were the only two hits he gave up, but two home runs, walked three. That happens. I talked with Sean Manaea, who is one of the top prospects in the Oakland A's system during the Arizona Fall League, and Sean was working on something different, I think with his slider. And he said, I want to try it out here. I want to try it out now because I know that these results don't really matter. I know that it's going to be rough. I know there's going to be an adjustment period. So I want to be able to do this now and get all that stuff over with and behind me. So when I get into the season, I'm not having to deal with that acclimatization period to a new pitch. And that's where John Gray is right now. He knows, he said yesterday to Thomas Harding, I know it's going to be frustrating. I know I have to learn from this. I'm a competitor, so it is frustrating, but I have to do that now. So I'm not worried about John Gray. And by all accounts, his stuff looks filthy. So he was missing a little bit yesterday, but the stuff looked tremendous.
I think the beauty of it right now for John Gray this year in camp is that he has the ability and the affordability to work on pitches in camp without worrying about end results. The last couple of years he's come to spring training, especially last year, it was more, well, if John Gray impresses, he's going to start the year in the rotation, and that's added pressure on yourself as well because – at that point, you want to get results. You want to go out there and strike out every guy you face and throw 100 miles an hour. And I think John Gray knows he has a spot locked up for himself in the rotation, I guess, to begin the year. So he has a little bit more leeway to work on things instead of just trying to get outs. He can work on a curveball that he can maybe use for a game in mid-April when he wants to bust it out on a, you know, 2-strike pitch in the fifth inning of a, you know, 2-run game or something like that. So when he gets the game experience with pitches like that and the ability to just go in there and not have to worry about striking everybody out or throwing 100 miles an hour, or if his ERA is ghastly, who cares? He knows he's got a spot locked up in the rotation, doesn't have to worry about any of the extraneous stuff now. We can work on just his pitch selection, his pitch count. He can work on what he needs to work on instead of just worrying about whether or not he's going to get a roster spot comes the end of spring training.
Here's the other thing, too. John Gray does not need that to be an 80-grade curveball.
No.
And that's one of the things he said last year when I was talking to him about it when he first started to throw it, because it was after the Rockies had shut him down. He wanted something to work on, so he thought, you know what, I'm going to learn how to throw a curveball. He doesn't need it to be perfect. What he needs is for it to be effective enough that it's in the back of guys' heads in any given count. If he can show it, if he can flash it and make it effective, then that gives him a weapon just via the deterrence factor of that. So he doesn't need it to be a dominant pitch.
He doesn't want to hit the guys in the back of the head with that pitch.
Well, true. But you never know.
Although it wouldn't hurt as badly, I guess, as a 98 in the back of the head.
Exactly.
Maybe so we're going to hit somebody in the back of the head, make it be that curveball in spring training.
Stay woke. So John Gray, so
you stay
far,
woke.
A couple of appearances, 3.86 ERA in total, 4 2/3 innings, 4 hits. He struck out 2. He's walked 4. He has hit a couple of batters. No, check that. He has not hit a couple of batters. He hasn't hit anybody. Actually, the Rockies' whole staff has only hit 1. It's looking at the wrong column. But he has given up the home run, the 2 home runs yesterday, and those are the only 2 runs that he's given up through his 2 appearances. So, not worried about John Gray. Tyler Matson.
And there were home runs,
story,
by the way, too. Jason Hayward and Anthony Rizzo. Those guys
were
pretty
good. Right, like they weren't slack homers at all. Tyler Matzik, I'm a little worried about.
Yes.
His ERA right now is listed as **.**, which means it's an infinite ERA because he gave up 3 runs on 3 hits, didn't get an out, walked 2. He was
a couple wild pitches as well.
Scratched from his second appearance, yeah. the Rockies are hoping it's something mechanical, but you always worry about it with Tyler Matzek.
Yeah. And really everyone is pulling for him. I mean, it's not like he's going out there trying to do any of this. You know, he wants to come back and be the guy he was in 2014. And, you know, he came back late last year and started getting some steps forward. And you see him come out the first time out, and it's just deja vu all over again from what we saw last year and what he saw when he's in the minor leagues a few years back. And, oh, it just breaks your heart when you see something like that happen. You hope it's mechanical, of course, obviously, but there's no way you can guarantee anything like that when you're Tyler Matzek. So just know that we're pulling for him here on the PDP, and we hope he gets it straightened out because,
and, you know,
it sucks.
Yeah, it does. But maybe it is something mechanical, because I think at this point, Tyler Matzek would be more than open enough to say, no, I got out there and I kind of fell into my same habits. I gotta work on that. He didn't say that. When he talked to Thomas Harding, he said, I don't think it's really anything to worry about. We're trying to figure out if it's something mechanic. Now, if Matzek is removed from competition for the next 2 weeks, then you really start to worry. Being scratched for one thing, throwing in sides and whatever it is, that's fine. That happens to guys all the time in spring training. But if this turns into something that's extended, then you really start to worry about it. So, certainly Tyler Matzek is one of the easiest dudes in the world to pull for, and you really hope that he starts to get it turned around if it is just a mechanical thing.
Yeah, I mean, we're 27 days from opening day, so.
Yeah. As of right now, I'd say, you know, Albuquerque certainly looks like the landing spot for him, but you really hope maybe a strong surge of the season and Matzek gets it figured out, whether it's, you know, even in a relief role, which he was really, really good in last year toward the end of the season for Albuquerque.
Right.
So who knows? Elsewhere, really encouraging stuff out of – we'll talk about the two big guys here in a minute, Kyle Freeland and Jeff Hoffman, who pitched in back-to-back sets against the Reds the other day. But Tyler Anderson has been really encouraging.
Yeah,
Anderson,
Tyler
last
Anderson.
Time out. Two innings, one hit, three strikeouts, one walk. He struck out six so far this spring. He's only walked one batter. The appearance before that, a little bit of a struggle against the Diamondbacks on the second. Three runs on four hits over two innings. Gave up a homer in that game. But – you know, this is a guy who hasn't pitched competitively in 18 months, really, unless you count some work at the Dominican complex after the end of last season. So this is really encouraging to see him not only feeling healthy, but being effective.
And the last time we saw Tyler Anderson on the mound prior to this spring training was at the Texas League playoffs 2 years ago. He left the playoff start with an elbow injury, didn't pitch all of last year. But in 2014 in Tulsa, he was one of the best pitchers in all of the minor leagues. A 1.98 ERA, 106 strikeouts, and 118 and a third innings. Only allowed three home runs the entire season in 23 starts for the Drillers. Had a nearly 3-to-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio. He was one of the best pitchers, not only in the Rocky system, of course, but in all minor league baseball. So a former first-round pick, you wonder where he might end up considering his skill set right now. The gun has him clocked right now. Fastball between 89 and 92. He's got a good changeup, however, slider. It's weird to see what you – because they don't really know what they're going to give him, Tyler Anderson, because it's been a full year since we've seen him pitch. So if you can stretch him out and he really impresses in camp, he can maybe start the year in Albuquerque's rotation, which I believe that would probably be the best case scenario for Tyler Anderson. And then if he impresses in the AAA level where he's never pitched before, then maybe you can get him a couple of spot starts. Or if somebody gets injured in the big leagues, you bring him up and see what he can do. But his little funky, deceptive delivery is still there. And he, with that kind of mechanics that he has, excuse me, it makes 89 to 92 look like 93 to 96 because he hides the ball really, really well, and that changeup can just be devastating to hitters. And so far, early on in camp at the very least, he's getting a lot of swing and misses. That's six strikeouts are tied for the most of anybody in the Rockies spring training camp right now with our good friend Charlie Sheen, Carlos Estevez. So it's fun to see Tyler Anderson play this year because he's been kind of an afterthought considering he missed the entirety of last season. So would people realize that he's a first-round pick back in camp and impressing so far early on? That's just another arm in the stable of exciting Rockies pitchers that we've seen so far in the early stages of March.
That's really the whole point. And it's kind of what people forget or assume the Rockies don't have a plan for. This is Jeff Breidich's exact plan, which is what we have tried to stress over and over and over again. if you get something effective out of Tyler Anderson, but he fits better in the bullpen, by acquiring and utilizing impact arms in a large wealth, you have the ability to then send him to the bullpen. You no longer have to say, we need this guy in the rotation. We have to fit this square peg into this round hole. If Tyler Anderson and Tyler Matzek profile better as left-handed guys in the bullpen, then maybe that's where their careers go.
At this point?
Right.
Yeah.
But in the past, the Rockies have never had that luxury. It's always been, no, this guy has to stick in the rotation. We have to figure out a way to get Sean Chacon to be an effective starting pitcher.
Yeah. I mean, that's Anderson was a 2011 first-round pick. So
he's still not that old. I mean, that's the thing with Tyler Anderson. He's only 26.
Exactly. And if he can get back this year with a full season missed in the minor leagues due to injury. So if he can get back to even where he was a couple of years ago when he was in Modesto and Tri-City, where he did very, very well in limited time as well. If he can get back to somewhat like that and get some experience in AAA initially and then be called up to the big leagues, maybe put in the bullpen first, I don't know how you can disagree with that. It's good to see just him on the mound. I mean, considering the injury history that he's had, just seeing him out there and healthy, that's the most important thing right now. And if he gives you some quality innings, whether it be in the rotation or in the bullpen, who cares? You take it.
I mean, that's the whole thing. That's the million-dollar question for the Rockies is, can you build a system where if pitchers fall through the cracks of the best-case scenario, they can still be effective in your organization in some role or another? They've never had the depth to be able to do that. Now they feel like they both have and are building the depth to be able to do that. Tyler Anderson, we had him as a three-time MILB.com organization all-star. He was the Texas League Pitcher of the Year in 2014, as Anthony noted, with that 1.98 ERA. He was a Baseball America AA all-star that season. Postseason All-Star in the Texas League in 2014. This is a kid who throughout his career in the minor leagues has put up a 2.38 career ERA. That's his career ERA in 59 total appearances. So this is no joke. I mean, this is not, oh man, this kid, even when he's there, he's not effective. He's not Greg Reynolds. When he's healthy, he's very, very good. So that's the key with Tyler Anderson is, even though it may not be what was initially forecasted for him, he still has the ability, as it looks right now, to be very effective in the upper minors and maybe in the major league bullpen or in the major league rotation, but we have not seen where he's going to fall yet. It's just different from in the past, guys who they don't fit the one role, and so they're continually plugged into that role, and then everything ends up, the wheels fall off completely.
Yeah.
So that's big. It's
been great to see him so far in camp. Another guy in the same vein, a lefty who's had some arm problems, Kyle Freeland has done all right in his first spring training appearance. Gave up one run in a couple innings, but struck out three in that game. So Kyle Freeland, first round pick a couple years back, if he can get back on track as well, that's another big arm that has a lot of promise in it, I guess, as it were, because Kyle Freeland a couple years ago, or just last year, excuse me, only made seven appearances in Modesto, two appearances in Grand Junction as well, but a 4.05 ERA in that time, just coming back from another arm injury. So he was just kind of getting back and making sure that he could actually be healthy and throw a couple of games here and there. Had a couple of rough outings that kind of skewed that ERA a little bit, but he showed a lot of flashes of good things. And so far, he's only, he's going to be 23 in May.
Right.
So a lot of time for Kyle Freeland to impress as well, whether he starts – I imagine starting in AA this year is probably where they would want to put him.
Yeah.
And he could rise quickly if he starts mastering the Eastern League. So he's done well in camp. We'll see how many more appearances he gets before he's sent back down to minor league camp. But there's no reason to think that Kyle Freeland won't be in Denver within the next couple of years, considering what his pedigree, considering where he was picked in the draft and what we've seen of his stuff early on in camp, whether it's his bullpen sessions that have been wowing some scouts and some of the beat writers around, or what we saw in that one game. So when he pitches next, we'll be able to get more of a gauge on what we have of Kyle Freeland right now. But again, like Tyler Anderson, him being healthy, him being in big league camp, learning from some of those veterans that they have in camp, that's never going to be a bad sign.
As Anthony noted, a limited amount of appearances in the full season minor league ranks last year, but Kyle Freeland finished very, very strong in the Arizona Fall League. Got roughed up in his first outing there, gave up six runs on five hits. He walked a couple against Scottsdale on October 14th in just two-thirds of an inning. But over his next five appearances, Freeland only gave up two earned runs two total earned runs, two total runs at all. Both of them were earned over his subsequent 24 and two-thirds innings. So that's pretty good. He dropped his ERA from 81 after his first appearance to 2.84 where it ended. And that's what I really like to see from Kyle Freeland, more so than him finishing healthy in Grand Junction and Modesto. The way he was not just healthy, but really good against Arizona Fall League competition, won his last four starts, pitcher wins. That's really impressive to me, because those rosters are better than what you're going to see on an average day in the California League, and probably yes. equivalent to what you're going to see on an average day in the Eastern League, maybe even a little bit better. So that, to me, was the most encouraging thing coming into the spring. And then to see that he's commanding things well. The one run he gave up in his appearance back on the 6th was a leadoff homer. That was the only hit he allowed. So I like basically everything we've seen from Kyle Freeland over his last, you know, month and a half of actual competitive work on a pitcher's mound. And that's exciting, because last year it really seemed like, oh, man, here we go again with another high draft pick. But it wasn't a serious injury. I mean, Kyle Freeland has had Tommy John surgery in the past. I think he had it in high school, actually.
Right, right. There were those flags coming out of him from college at Evansville.
Yeah. So that's what kind of worried you about it. But the surgery last year was, I think, just bone chips and scar tissue, which is pretty routine. And he came back, felt healthy, felt really good toward the end of the season in the fall league. That's the most important thing. When you come into a season and everything feels good, it doesn't only make you better physically, it makes you better mentally, because you're not worrying about going out there and turning it all loose. And I would imagine that's how Tyler Anderson feels right now as well. And our next guy to talk about is a guy who was in that process last year, and that's Jeff Hoffman. It was coming off of Tommy John surgery that he had just prior to the draft in 2014, still went with the 9th overall pick to the Blue Jays that year. And then in his first start after Tommy John surgery for Class A Advanced Dunedin last year, touched 99. He's been fantastic already. Hoffman in total so far through his first two innings in the spring, 2 strikeouts, no walks. He allowed just 1 hit. So pretty good stuff we've seen so far from Jeff Hoffman. And haven't been able to watch any of this yet, but from what it sounds like,
unfortunately.
Yeah. Curveball is devastating. Changeup looks really good. Hoffman is the type of guy who has frontline stuff. I mean, he is another John Gray. Fastball grades at a 65. Curveball grades at a 65 on the 20 to 80 scouting scale for MLB Pipeline. Changeup's a 55. Control's a 55. Those are all above or well above the major league average. He is going to be a hell of a lot of fun to watch this spring.
Yeah, and that the curveball is the pitch, and that is his bread and butter, to get swings and misses. And it took him a while to start re-throwing that pitch after Tommy John surgery. They didn't want him to throw it a lot when he first came back, but now I believe the training wheels seem to be off with the post-surgery repertoire for Jeff Hoffman. He can let it go, I believe. So, but that's also been the pitch that has been the huge bugaboo in Coors Field. We saw that with Daryl Kyle, with other pitchers coming in. Greg Reynolds and his, you know, knuckle curve or whatever it ended up being. Besides a home run, seeing that pitch succeed in Coors Field has been very, very rare. So this, from what the scouts have said that we have read about Jeff Hoffman, is that that curve is going to play anywhere. That curve is going to be a weapon no matter what stadium he calls home. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens when he starts throwing that at altitude. And we may see that initially once the season starts, if he gets put in AAA Albuquerque, we can see how he can actually get to throwing that pitch effectively there, maybe get some training wheels to be put on for that curveball initially, and then have them take off when he realized that it's okay. It's still just the same pitch. It's still the same game. It's still 60 feet, 6 inches, and he can throw that with a lot of authority when he needs to. So I can't wait to see what Jeff Hoffman does the rest of camp. I imagine he'll be starting this year in AAA Albuquerque. He could be going back to AA for a couple of starts. He's never pitched above there last year for New Hampshire and New Britain after coming over in the trade. 20 combined appearances, 9 in Double A last year. Overall, 3.03 ERA, 75 strikeouts in 104 innings. But that was, like I said, just coming back from Tommy John surgery. So a bit of an abbreviated year. This is really going to be his first full season of professional baseball. So it seems like, well, he as a college guy, you should want to get him in the big leagues a little bit faster. But really, this kid has not had a full season in pro baseball yet. So there still needs to be a little bit of tempered expectations with Jeff Hoffman so far, but there's definitely a lot of things to take from what we saw and what the scouts saw when they saw him pitch last week that you can be really, really excited about.
Yeah, the thing I mean, you talk about the curveball and how that's really his money pitch, but the thing I like about Jeff Hoffman is that he has a fastball to complement it. So it isn't just, oh, it's Daryl Kyle or it's Mike Hampton with the sinker or whatever it is. He has the fastball, which is obviously what the Rockies are trying to build their staff around. Nick Roque had a great article this week about kind of the intricacies of the fastball. There is no such thing as a fastball. Every fastball is different, whether it's a four-seam or whether it's a two-seam or whether it's a cutter, whether it has sink. All of those are different, but that seems to be what the Rockies are honing in on as a key to be effective at altitude, and it's something that they have not tried in the past. They tried curveball guys. They tried sinker ball guys. They tried guys who have to end
change-up
the system,
a
component of it. Yeah, but change-up guys. Guys who need to be able to throw a change-up effectively. Now, I think what they're realizing is a fastball, and Charlie Blackman said this in that story, a fastball jumps on guys more at altitude than it does elsewhere because it travels a little bit quicker. So that in baseball, when you have a fraction of a second to adjust, if a fraction of that fraction is taken away, you're beaten as a hitter. So that's what the Rockies are really keying in on now. So even though the curveball is really the money pitch for Jeff Hoffman, the fastball is so good, and he needs to learn how to command it a little bit better. His control is good. He kind of has to command pitches a little bit better than just controlling them to certain parts of the zone in order to especially bump those strikeout numbers up. But that is a massive compliment to have because you're not just relying on off-speed stuff. You're not just relying on breaking stuff. He has the ability to reach back and go 97 to 99 if he needs it, and that's what the Rockies have really, really started to bring in with these impact big power arms over the last 18 months now since Jeff Bridich took over.
And I want to talk about the choice quote from that article from Nick Groke by Nick Hundley, talking about fastballs, saying we say fastball, but the word glosses over a lot of details about what a fastball truly means. Here's Nick Hundley on that. He said, it's like language. How many times do you say love and you mean it 100 different ways? I love nachos and I love my wife. It's the same word, but it means completely different things.
That is a perfect quote, too, because it's true. There is no one definition to the fastball that any of these guys throw. You know, Eddie Butler's is something that was devastating when we saw him in the minor leagues that has really fallen off. But it feels like everybody's fastball is different to a certain extent. So that was a great, that's one of my favorite stories that Nick has written, because that was a really, really well put together piece, and it kind of gives you an idea of what it means when we talk about it, when the Rockies talk about how important that fastball is to being successful at Coors Field. Some of the other guys who have really impressed so far this spring, Simone Castro has looked really good. He's pitched two innings. He's given up four hits, but he struck out three, walked only one guy, has not allowed a run. Carlos Estevez, Anthony Noto has been really, really good through his three
appearances
so far. Charlie Sheen. Jason Gurka has been good. Jason Gurka, we had Mike Petriello on the Jason Gurka edition of the podcast. Jason Gurka has been really good so far, and he could be a bullpen component. Jason Mott has only pitched in one appearance so far, but he's been fine. We don't really know what all to expect, I guess, from Jason Mott so far this season. Scott Oberg's been good. So there have been, you know, flashes, and it's such a small sample size for us to talk about, but it's the first baseball that we have to talk about since basically September of last year, so give us a break.
I mean, how can you not like what you've seen from Carlos Estevez? He hasn't pitched above double A yet in his career, but last year he was 18 of 23 in save opportunities between Modesto and New Britain, a 3.40 ERA, but 68 strikeouts and 55 and two-thirds.
Yes.
And so far in camp, three innings, six strikeouts, no walks.
People are really high on him.
People are really, really high on Carlos Estevez. And he's one of those guys that a low-risk guy, obviously a bullpen guy, so you're not worried about starting his service clock. If he's one of the six best relievers in camp this year, I think Carlos Estevez has a chance to crack the big league club on opening day.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously one of the tenets of what Jeff Bridich is trying to do is build out that bullpen. And like you said, if Estevez is one of the top guys who performs, I don't think Jeff Bridich shies away from giving a guy a shot, even if it's out of camp, just because of the fact that he's young or just because of the fact that he hasn't pitched above double A. We've seen guys make that jump and be effective all over the big leagues in recent seasons. Estevez, by the way, also pitched in the Arizona Fall League last year and was really, really good. So I think
only 23 as well. Yeah.
In total, by the way, he saved six or seven games in the AFL. And yeah, he's only 23. The weird thing about Estevez is he was signed in 2011 as an 18-year-old. He actually didn't make it to full season ball until 2014. But then second season full season ball was last year and he blew up. I really, really like that. His fastball grades out as a 75 on the 20 to 80 scouting scale for MLB.com. He basically sits 96, 98.
That's he's got ridiculous. Great control too. A nearly 5-to-1 K to walk ratio last year. So if you can combine that with swing and miss capability, which is what he's been showing so far, that could be a very much a weapon that the Rockies have in the bullpen.
So there have been a lot of really intriguing and interesting signs so far. Jordan Lyles goes today, again, as we're recording this on whatever the hell day this is.
March 8th.
Tyler Chatwood threw a couple innings in his first appearance. It's great to see Tyler Chatwood back out there. Christian Bergman looked really good. It was only two innings, but Christian Bergman looked good. The bummer of this spring is Jairo Diaz.
Yes. Just came out yesterday. Diaz, who was probably going to be a key contributor for the Rockies bullpen this year, had an elbow injury. They did an MRI, shows that he tore the UCL. He will have to have Tommy John surgery and miss the season. Diaz was acquired prior to last season for Josh Rutledge from the Angels. He's a guy who throws really, really hard. He was probably going to have a good opportunity to crack opening day in the bullpen. He had a decent year last year in AAA, but... yeah, his season is over before it starts, and that is a huge, huge bummer for the Rockies because he's still fairly young, too. He was going to turn 25 this season. Last year in Albuquerque, 50 punch-outs and 55 innings. Don't worry about the ERAs. It's Albuquerque. It's spring training, or it's the PCL, a bit different. But he was a guy who throws super, super hard. He had a 10-plus K per 9 each of the last couple of years, and... it's too bad they're going to have to miss him this year because he was going to be a guy the Rockies are going to count on for some innings this year. So they'll have to find it other ways. And one of those other ways could be Carlos Estevez. So who knows? They're trying to find guys who want to perform in camp early on and see if they can match it up at the big league level once March keeps going on and see if they keep rising to the challenge of these whatever comes in front of them. So if Estevez keeps doing that, he can step up and take care of Jairo Diaz's spot. But yeah, it's tough for the first Tommy John of the season to be a Rockies pitcher, and it's going to be Jairo Diaz. So, and today Carter Capps was another one who came out with it. So it's just too bad.
Again, these are the reasons behind why the Rockies have made the moves they've made since Jeff Breidich took over, because that is a devastating move to any bullpen. But the Rockies in the past have never had the depth to fill a void created by an injury like this. So that's the reason why you acquire as many potentially impactful arms as possible. Focus on those. The Rockies know they're going to be able to develop position player talent. They know they have David Dahl coming up. They know they have Ryan McMahon coming up. They know they have Raimel Tapia coming up. Pitchers have been a different story through 23 years now of franchise history. So acquire as many as you can, throw them all against the wall and see who sticks. That's the biggest difference. Position player side, David Dahl has been on fire. Tapia has been on fire. Who has not been exciting on the position player side so far? Thomas has been really good.
Ryan McMahon has struggled. He's the one who
McMahon
is really
not looked great.
Yeah, he's played six games, 0 for 11 with six strikeouts.
He's never
a little bit over
high A, so you know that's to be expected.
Exactly.
And he's going to be fine, but yeah, he's the one who kind of stands out, I guess. But everybody else, this has been. You don't want to get too excited because
it's 1 week. It's 1 week of spring training.
Is
it? We're not going to get excited.
Playing in real games, it's like, man, this is fantastic.
Yeah, and the game that I saw with David Dahl, I saw the game with the story home run. Dahl, it was late in the game. He was facing a reliever for the D-backs, a lefty reliever. It was righty reliever. And hard slider in, and he pulled it down the right field line. It was about 6 inches foul, would have been a double, possibly a triple, depending on Dahl's speed, how fast the fielder got to it. The next pitch with a runner on second base, it was a fastball about 4 inches off the ground, and Dahl went down and got it and hit just an absolute laser beam into center field for a base hit to knock in the run. So it was two different pitches, one with slider down and in, another fastball right off the shoe tops that he just roped into center. So that was one of those moments you see, okay, this guy can definitely play. This guy can definitely play at the highest level. It was, you know, fastball was at 95, 96, and he just rocketed it back up the middle. So that was one of those moments you can be very, very excited about going forward.
Dahl's got a homer so far. Trevor Story, of course, has two. The Rockies in total have five, so the other two come from
even Mark
Carlos
Reynolds.
Gonzalez and good. Mark Reynolds. Yeah, Mark Reynolds has been killing the ball so far. He's 4 for his first 11. He's batting .364, but he's got a double and a homer. He's driven in three. He's actually scored just two runs. I thought he had more runs scored than more runs batted in, but Mark Reynolds has been fine so far. I know. I'm sorry. This is the thing right now is you're starting to see these guys who – they're not that far off. I mean, now you're seeing really the appetizer course from David Dahl and from Tapia and from Story and from Murphy. I mean, obviously we've seen Tom Murphy a little bit up at the major league level already, but it's not like we're going to be getting excited about these guys and we're not going to see them again for 3 years. I mean, we could see David Dahl at this rate. We could really see David Dahl by midseason if he blows up to start the year.
Correct. All right. Speaking of what we're going to see going forward this year, let's talk about who we think the starting nine will be on opening day. So let's start with the number one position. Let's start with the pitcher. Who is the opening day starter for you this year?
Jorge De La Rosa.
I think that's pretty standard. DLR. I think it's got to be DLR. I think he's earned it considering the career that he's had with the Rockies. I think there's no other choice there. I think it would be very, very hard-pressed for anybody else to get that spot other than Jorge De La Rosa.
By the way, Thomas Harding pointed out the reason why Jorge De La Rosa has not seen action so far this spring, and Chad Bettis is the same way. There's really nothing behind it. They're just kind of trying to limit the start of the season for them. Yeah. No need to waste huge inning numbers on them so far, so early, I should say, to get into the season. So nothing to be concerned about there with either of those guys. But I think he's your guy right now. He's the veteran. He's the one who everybody on the staff looks to. Ironically, he's had so much success in Coors Field and now doesn't really follow the exact same mold as what the Rockies are trying to put out there, and guys who throw heat and really know how to blow by fastballs against opposing hitters, but commands his stuff really well. We know who Jorge De La Rosa is and what he does well, and that's the proven commodity the Rockies have in this rotation.
It's funny. He had his highest strikeout per nine innings last year since 2010. Struck out over eight batters per nine innings for the first time since 2010.
Love watching DLR pitch.
In 26 starts, a 4.17 ERA, 9-7 with the record. #PitcherWins.
#PitcherWins. He's so fun. All right.
So DLR number one. Number two, I have to imagine Nick Hundley, the veteran, will get the start on opening day.
Yep.
With Tommy Murphy on the roster, I'm going to guess, unless they want Murphy to get consistent ABs in AAA, and in that case, they would bring up somebody like maybe Dustin Garneau to back up for Nick Hundley. But Nick Hundley, I believe, should be the opening day catcher. I think he's earned it. He's got one more year left on his contract. He was solid enough last year for the Rockies. I think he's earned that spot.
I agree. And the thing I really like about Nick Hundley, too, is he has the perfect mindset, and catchers are generally this way, but he has the perfect mindset to tutor a guy like Tom Murphy or to tutor a guy like Dustin Garneau. Tom Murphy obviously is the long-term plan at catcher for the Rockies, but I love that about Nick Hundley, that he is one of those dudes who you really would want, if your son was a catcher, you'd want him to learn from somebody like Nick Hundley. So I like
that.
And
last year, he hit .301 in 103 games last year, 10 homers and .807 OPS. That's outstanding for him. It was his best year as a hitter in terms of OPS since 2011, when he only played 82 games with the Padres. I mean, it was only his second year of his career playing over 100 games. So I think the fact that he was able to put up very solid numbers and do a pretty good job defensively with that pitching staff that the Rockies put out last year, when he actually received the baseball, he was fine. Unless Kyle Kendrick was pitching, and then he never caught a pitch. So, yeah, I think with one more year left on his contract, I think that should be the catching spot on opening day. All right, first
base. I wouldn't have any trouble, by the way, with Tom Murphy going to Albuquerque and getting at bats.
Of course not.
He played 33 games there last year. If they want to send him there to get him regular work, I think that's fine, especially because down there he's more than likely going to be working with a lot of guys who are going to be in the rotation for a long time to come, or in the bullpen for a long time to come.
And Murphy's only 24. I think he'll be turning 25 the day before opening day, actually, April 3rd.
First base is kind of a question mark. I want to say Ben Paulson, but it's weird to be, you know, somebody who watches the Rockies and not really know what the full season answer is at first base on a consistent basis. I think Ben Paulson has shown over his time he's going to win that job and he's going to keep it. I think that's how it will go, but it's somewhat of a question mark. Mark Reynolds, I think, is a guy who factors in very well, but I don't know if he seizes that spot regularly. I still feel like Ben Paulson is your best option in total. Now, that
being
said,
straight platoon.
Yeah, there's a platoon that will happen there, but Ben Paulson's numbers have been very good pretty much across the board in his major league career. I mean, obviously, he's had some struggles against left-handed pitching, but I like Ben Paulson as a major league regular.
Yeah, and it's going to be against the Arizona Diamondbacks. It's going to be against Zach Greinke. Mark Reynolds in his career is 2-13 against Zach Greinke, if that might come into play with it. The only reason I would say it might be Reynolds because Walt Weiss will defer to the veteran.
Yeah, it could be.
And just for strictly opening day purposes, and then going forward, it'll be more of a platoon situation. But yeah, Ben Polson, an 809 career OPS in his one-plus seasons in the big leagues. Last year, a 787 OPS, hit .277, 11 home runs, 19 doubles in 116 games. So that would be only my thing. If Walt Weiss wants to go with a veteran, I would say Mark Reynolds will start on opening day.
Okay.
Right. But I think going forward, the platoon should be put in place. I think Reynolds is much more of a just mashing lefties guy. Paulson obviously can show that he can hit righties. The splits in his career and even last year against righties, 815 OPS against right-handed pitching, 554 against lefties. So I think going forward, it'll be Paulson, but I think Reynolds gets started on opening day.
Second base, Forrest Wall.
Yeah, second base, Forrest Wall. Maybe look at Orlando Hudson out of somewhere and drop him on opening day.
O-Dog.
No, DJ LeMahieu. Yeah, it's... yeah. I was actually talking to Carlos Gonzalez when I was in Scottsdale on Thursday, and I asked him, because I asked him about how he's one of those guys who was now showing up as a veteran leader for a lot of the young kids in camp, and I asked, when he was coming up with the D-backs and with the A's coming up in his first big league camps, who were some of the veterans that were showing him how to be a big leaguer? And the first thing he said was Orlando Hudson. He said he was the guy that he brought him into camp
Everybody
and showed
loved
him
Orlando
ropes.
Hudson.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Showed him the ropes and taught him how to be a big leaguer and how to conduct yourself in big league camp. And so that was very interesting because he got guys like Eric Chavez with those Oakland teams, Randy Johnson with those D-backs teams when he was coming up first into camp. So that was a very interesting call on Carlos Gonzalez's part. Orlando Hudson was the first names that he mentioned.
The O-Dog. Yeah, everybody loved that guy. I don't know. Why not?
All right, so DJ LeMahieu. I mean, come on.
It's obviously DJ LeMahieu. We're not actually having a real conversation about it. Shortstop, we've covered at length. I'm going to say that it'll be Adames.
Okay, I'll go the other way, and I'll say Trevor Story. I think Trevor Story will press enough in big league camp that they will say, "All right, Trevor, go for it."
Both of those guys excite me, so I'm really happy either way. I think if Trevor goes down to AAA and rakes to start the season at Albuquerque, that's ultimately a positive and it's beneficial in the long run. If he starts at the major league level, you know, I think that's what most of us would hope for, and that's really exciting as well. So I don't think you can really go
wrong
there. Third base, Vinny Castilla.
Yeah, third base, Ty Wigginton.
Let's go Jeff Cirillo. We'll have a Jeff Cirillo, Ty Wigginton platoon. How about
Chris Stein's getting that open spot?
I would imagine Nolan Arenado will probably get the nod at third base.
Yeah, we'll see.
I would think that'll probably be the case for him.
Yes.
Yeah, Nolan Arenado.
Left field, Corey
Dickerson.
Corey Dickerson. You see he hit like a 7,000-foot home run the other day?
Yeah, I did see that.
Roughly 7,000 feet.
Yeah, approximately. Left I'm happy field. For Corey Dickerson. I hope he goes and kills it in Tampa Bay.
Of course, yeah, absolutely. Left field, Gerardo Parra. Will get the opening day nod, the big free agent signing for the Rockies this offseason. He's got to be the guy.
I would certainly hope so.
I wonder what Gerardo Parra.
There would be no reason that he's not.
Because obviously we know Parra has killed the Rockies in his career. But he'll be facing his former team in his first game, which I find very interesting. We'll see against Zach Greinke in his career. Hey, 296 hitter. How about that?
That's not bad. Gerardo Parra, there's a story up on Rockies.com today from Thomas Harding that Parra kind of has one of those approaches that you hope from the Rockies perspective will be beneficial for them on the road because he's a very contact emphasized hitter. Not always the case for Rockies hitters to go on the road and strike out a billion times per game. Parra's in left field. Blackman's
center
in center field. Cargo's in
right
field.
Yeah, I think that's pretty simple. That's already set in stone, I would have to imagine.
So there is your 2016 Colorado Rockies opening day lineup, barring anything unforeseen. But I think what's exciting for the Rockies is what happens beyond opening day, how the rotation stacks up behind Jorge De La Rosa, what the final composition of the bullpen is, because it actually looks like there is some depth there for the first time, and who the guys are going to be who break into long-term spots. I really feel like Ben Paulson has the ability to seize that job long-term. I mean, obviously, he's going to sit down against left-handed pitching, but against right-handed pitching, he's, I think, your guy. I really think his upside suggests that he's somebody who can fill that role until you get to where you feel like you have a really long-term solution. If Nolan Arenado signs a long-term deal, then Ryan McMahon is your guy there ultimately going forward at first base. And then shortstop. I mean, that's the only other conversation.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Got a long ways to go.
Solved a lot of problems.
Yeah,
a lot of problems today.
Still got 3 weeks to go.
Yes, 3 weeks to go. Coming up, we are hoping on this little Colorado Rockies podcast that we have here, Mark Razum, who is the head groundskeeper for your Colorado Rockies. We're hoping to catch up with Raz, as they call him, to talk about Coors Field, the playing surface at Coors Field, and what it is like to be the guy who has to get a baseball field ready to play after a hockey rink sat on top of it for about 10 days.
Last spoiler
year,
alert,
a concert
it
in the middle of a season. Yeah, tarps. How he got into baseball, the smell of what it's like to roll up a tarpaulin after a
hot, wet tarp.
Just one of the greatest
moist,
things you could ever imagine.
Hot tarp.
Gross. But yeah, we're open to talk with Raz, hopefully at some point this week, which will be on next week's edition of the show. And I'm making the executive call. We're going to go back to weekly episodes starting now and forward.
Oh, God.
Baseball is back!
I have so many things to
Anthony,
do.
Anthony, shut up. I'm going to be in Phoenix until next Wednesday, and then I'll be back, and then baseball season is basically underway, which is ridiculous.
Yep. By the way, StatsPass, our proprietary Stats LLC database, has pronunciation for Tapia. It is Raymel Tapia.
Okay, it's so we had the second half, right?
Yeah. Raymel Tapia.
Everybody calls him Tapia, who is in that organization.
Think,
that bothers
me. I think
me.
That is just because they're very white.
Well, you said it. I didn't. But I would be in full agreement. Okay, so Raymel. Okay.
Raymel
Tapia.
All right,
I'm going to train myself to change that then.
I believe, yeah, we can double check with Keaton Galogli, but I believe that is going to be it going forward.
All right. I like it. I like it. Okay, awesome. So I'm gonna go down there. I'm hoping to talk with Zach Wilson, Rockies Player Development Director, hopefully tomorrow, but I would imagine it'll probably be later on in the week. I'm going to have some cool stuff coming at MILB.com from Cactus League action all week and into next week. We'll talk with some Rockies prospects for the podcast and some players for the podcast, etc. And, then we're going to be back on to regular baseball conversation here week to week. As the 2016 season gets rolling along here at the Old Purple Dinosaur Podcast. And new merchandise coming soon from our good pals at Humble Monster.
Yes.
Like sweet new stuff.
Yeah, really, really good stuff. It'll be coming up. We're going to try to get it in conjunction with opening day.
It's going to be a hell of a lot of fun.
Yes.
Get pumped.
Also, let me know if I burned any bridges when I was down there on Thursday in Salt River Fields. Who knows? You never know. I was dropping your name a lot. And then being very, very vulgar and inappropriate. So
you really burn the bridges.
Yes.
Dropping my name.
Yes.
Did you drop it to Patrick Saunders because he doesn't like our guff?
No.
I
wouldn't even dream of it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So until next week, you can find us on iTunes. You can rate, review, and subscribe to the Show Before the Show podcast and the Purple Dinosaur podcast. Those are my two podcasts that I'm going to plug unendingly now. But you can find the PDP there. You can also find us at purpleroad.com. There you can track down an RSS feed if you do not access iTunes podcasts. If you want to listen to us talk about the Rockies, if you want to listen to me and Sam Dykstra talk about minor league baseball prospects, all that stuff is there. You can get your PDP t-shirts and other merchandise coming up here very shortly at humblemonster.com. And in the meantime, just go there and buy some of the sweet stuff they have at humblemonster.com anyway.
Yeah, it's sweet. So go buy
it. It's amazing.
Jeez.
Go do that, you jerks. Anthony's on Twitter. He's at Master Tones. I am at Tyler Mon. And the PDP is at Purple Dino Cast. And until next week, we get back into it on a regular basis. I'll be down in Arizona, and you can be jealous of how Anthony and I have gotten to watch actual baseball over the last 2 weeks.
Whee!
All right, we'll talk to you guys then. Bye.
Bye. I want to put that on a candle.
Hot wood tar candle.
Ugh.
That would be up there with the worst smelling candles.
I think of all time. Could, yeah.
I cannot
hot,
imagine
hot,
there would be
tarp.
Hot yeah. wet tarp. Would be the grossest. Oh God.
It's like a Harry Potter jelly bean.
Gross. Yeah, no, I don't really have any interest in ever smelling that again.